Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterworld. A world of never-ending happiness. You can always see the sun. Day or night. So when you call up that shrink in Beverly Hills, you know the one. Doctor, everything will be alright. Instead of asking how much of your time is left, ask him how much of your mind, baby. Cause in this life, things are much harder than in the afterworld. This life, you're on your own. And if the elevator tries to break you down,
right, we're back with the Dystopian Dance Party podcast. This was not the episode we were planning on recording this month. We had a whole episode in the can for the Legend of Zelda video game series. And as I was editing it, we got the news that Prince had died. And suddenly, it just felt so meaningless to do a podcast about Zelda games. I think we both kind of needed to do this one instead. So at some point we'll put the Zelda podcast up, but for right now we're going to concentrate on Prince. So, unfortunately, so many people are dying this year that this is almost becoming like a formula for us. I thought we would do something similar to what we did with the David Bowie podcast back in January, which was, you know, we would go through and talk about our experiences with that artist, you know, how we first got into their work. And then after that, we would talk about some of our favorite moments from their careers. It's kind of interesting because in this case, it's almost like our positions are reversed. Like with David Bowie, we were talking about how, you know, I like got into him when I was a teenager, and Kelly, he was always just kind of there. And with me, like, I can't, you know, I was born in 1984, summer of 1984, like a couple of months after Purple Rain came out. And so there was, I never lived in a Prince-less world. You know, there was never a moment where I like became aware of Prince. I remember, you know, he was always on the radio and stuff. I have vague memories of his music videos, especially When Doves Cry. Something about that opening where he gets out of the bathtub and like holds his hand out of the camera and it freeze frames, that really appealed to my inherent sense of drama. And I've always
And
yeah, I think it might have awakened some latent homosexual feelings. And then, you know, there was the video for Kiss, which is, of course, a classic. You don't have to be beautiful to turn me on. I just need your body, baby, from dusk till dawn. And, you know, it's sad to say, but probably the first time I was really conscious of Prince was when I went to see Batman, the movie, because, you know, at that point I was 5 years old. I was into Batman, you know, I definitely wanted to see that movie. It wasn't like I wanted to go see Batman because Prince did the soundtrack, but I was definitely aware of the music. And years later, like when I hadn't seen the 1989 Batman movie for like a decade, I had it in my head that in the scene toward the end where Jack Nicholson as the Joker is dancing to Prince's song Trust, I had it in my head that it was actually Prince on a parade float performing the song. It turned out it was Jack Nicholson. You know, anybody, it's a mistake anyone could have made. but yeah, that was my false memory. What makes you not real of a trust? And but I didn't really get into Prince until I was in college. And, you know, I wish I could remember. I feel like it might have been... I feel like it might have been the song Controversy that made me think, you know, this is like more than just fun 80s pop music. And it had that kind of new wave feel with the synthesizers, but then at the same time, it was so weird. You know, there's that breakdown where all of a sudden he's reciting the Lord's Prayer, and it was just like, what is this? You know, I'd never heard anything quite like it.
My Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory.
And then I saw Purple Rain finally, and that was kind of what cemented it for me, especially the scene where he does the Beautiful Ones. It's weird. It's hard to describe, but I know I'm not the only person who that's their favorite part of the movie, because I recently saw a little article in Rolling Stone about how, like, the Beautiful One scene, is that's the scene that made Prince into a star. And that's always what, you know, runs through my mind when I think about that movie, just like him at the piano, and then he gets up and, you know, runs his hand through his hair, and just like everything, his whole stage presence is so perfect. It was amazing. And I've been a Prince fan ever since then. And like a really serious Prince fan.
Bring to life a vision in one's mind. The beautiful ones always smash the picture. Every time.
And you know, that actually brings something up that I've been thinking about. I have kind of a prevailing discomfort with like being a fan of things. Like fandom seems so earnest, and you know, it just sort of makes me uncomfortable. Like, because it's all about loving something so much that you completely give yourself over to it, and you don't care how embarrassing it looks. And you know, when I was a kid, I went through fandoms, what we would call now, very rapidly. You know, like I was into Ghostbusters, I was into Ninja Turtles, I was into Batman. I'm still into Batman, but you know, for the most part, it was like I'd be into something for like a year or two, and then I'd drop it, and then I'd be like fucking embarrassed about like the thing that I was so into. And the only like, I think that's where like my suspicion of being a fan comes from, because it just created so much childhood embarrassment for me. But with Prince, I can understand it, and he's a great artist to be a fan of, because there's just so much when you scratch the surface. You know, I mean, you can be somebody who likes When Doves Cry in 1999, and you just buy the very best of Prince or whatever, and you know, that's all you need. But if you really want to dig deeper, you can just dig and dig and dig. Like, there's so many, you know, there's like deep tracks, and then there's outtakes, and then there's, you know, he recorded like almost every show he played. There's a soundboard recording of, because he would record his own stuff. Like, it's insane the amount of material there is to be a fan of with Prince. It never, you never reach the bottom of it.
And so many different styles of music too. Like, he did everything, not all that well, but
yeah. I mean, and so, you know,
he just experimented a lot.
I guess it's kind of like when we were talking about David Bowie, who's a similar artist in a lot of ways, as a lot of people have been observing with their you know, deaths coming so close together. You know, we started out as fans of like his glam rock stuff, and then we got into his different styles. And with Prince, it's the same thing. You know, I started out on Purple Rain, and then I kind of drifted over to Sign of the Times, which that alone is like, it's like a whole body of work in just two albums, you know. And then I got into like his kind of, basically the albums between those two, the kind of psychedelic era with The Revolution. And neither of us go too far past 1988 is one thing you'll notice. We have,
but we came right back.
Right. but, you know, honestly, even some of his 90s stuff, I have a grudging appreciation for. We're not going to talk about it today. But yeah, there's just the sheer breadth of what he produced is pretty amazing. What about you? What's your Prince story?
I mean, as usual, it was all just secondhand from you, pretty much. But I do remember, like, I remember watching the When Doves Cry video. I think it was a pop-up video, and laughing when he got out of the bathtub. Because my whole life has been laughing at male nudity, but also appreciating it. And, yeah, and just, like, him crawling across the bathtub, like, that is one of my favorite scenes ever. Ever. Like, getting up and then crawl, like, it's funny to me, but it's also really sexy.
Well, that's kind of, but he always kind of straddles that line between like camp and you know, genuine appeal. You know, like, so much of what he does and what he did and what he wore is ridiculous, but he also has this incredible, like, animal magnetism, you know?
He's the only one that could do it. I think that's why it's funny, is because you imagine just, like, some regular guy doing it, and it's hilarious. Like, nobody else could do that and look good but Prince. Right. So yeah, I remember that. And then the next thing I really remember is Mom had a, I think it was when, you know, Napster was happening before Metallica fucked it up. And she had downloaded some music, and she had a CD of all just like Napster downloads. And I remember Raspberry Beret was on that, and I just used to hear that in the car all the time. And I really like that song. I still do. I got kind of sick of it because, like, one of the ones they play on the radio, and when you hear something over and over again, it just kind of loses its appeal.
Right.
But lately, I've just gotten back into it. And then I don't think I really cared about Prince until when I was in sixth grade, and you came back and had been listening to him, and so I got introduced to all this stuff, like Purple Rain and all that stuff. And I was mostly just listening to his, like, 84, like, I think Controversy through Purple Rain. Mm-hmm. So, like, 82 through 84. And it wasn't until later that I got into everything else. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I was in, like, 10th grade that I saw Purple Rain. So that was quite a few years after when I initially got introduced to it. But, yeah, I think that's basically my history with it.
Summer that I came home and we were listening to Prince, that was basically the birth of Jerry Curl June, what became Jerry Curl June on this blog. Because I remember we had like a playlist on, you know, like iTunes or whatever we were using. It must have been iTunes. And we had like stuff from you know, Purple Rain and Controversy in 1999 and stuff from like Thriller by Michael Jackson. And that's what we were listening to all summer. It was like, it was basically Jerry Curl music. We just didn't call it that yet. So obviously, you know, he was hugely influential to us.
Well, yeah, cause I remember it was like January that I had first started listening to Prince. Cause that was when you first came back. And then when you came home to stay for the summer, yeah, we were listening to I don't know what it is about the summer, but I always just want to listen to Jerry Curl music in the summer.
Yeah, it's like,
but I remember
it's good, like open window driving in the car music.
Yes, there's something about like the way the sky looks in the summer that is very Jerry Curl like. I don't know, and it's hot and sweaty. It's summer is basically like being inside a Jerry Curl.
And our hair, we have curly hair. And so, you know, it gets so humid that our hair basically, especially
when
we sweat.
Yeah, I have a Jerry Curl all summer. Yeah, one time I went over to my friend's house and we were in the hot tub, and like I just had my hair down and it was just regular. And then by the time I got out, everyone was like laughing at my hair, and I looked in the mirror and I looked like Lionel Richie. So, and that was in the summer.
Yeah. you know, it's hard because, like, with I would say Prince means more to me, actually, than David Bowie, even more than David Bowie does. But with Bowie, it's like I had this very specific, like, you know, these memories as a teenager and identifying so strongly with that music. Prince, like, kind of snuck up on me, you know, like I can't. Like, I think it was Controversy and The Beautiful Ones that turned me into a Prince fan. But, like, for the life of me, I can't remember. You know, I just know it was around 2003, 2004 when I sort of discovered his music. And, yeah, it's just, like, it's harder to kind of turn into a narrative, but he's just always kind of been there.
Come to you, I'm automatic, baby. There's no one else like me. I'm the best you'll ever find. No one else could understand you. You're too complex. They say nothing's perfect, but they don't know you. Can you hear me?
I'm
addicted to your pleasure. I'm addicted to your pain. It's not a man.
I'm addicted.
Not a man that leaves.
So, you know, I think maybe if we kind of dig into the songs that we chose to talk about and what they mean to us, like, that will be a way for us to kind of, like, get at why Prince is so important to us. So we're kind of going in chronological order of the songs released, so we'll kind of go back and forth. And Callie, you actually chose the earlier songs for us today.
Yeah. So my first choice is Soft and Wet. Like it because I like songs about vaginas. And this is, you know, one of the first songs that I really got into Prince about that was, like, not from Purple Rain or something. Because I remember you burned me a CD of just, like, it was basically, like, the best of Prince. It had, like, all the usual songs. And I think this is considered, like, a single. But, you know, it's one of his older songs, so you don't hear it as much. At least I don't, like, on the radio and stuff. I don't know, I just really like it. I think it's the first song that Prince did that, like, really sounds like how Prince would continue to sound for pretty much the rest of his career, at least for the next couple of years.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of his first album, For You, is, I mean, he uses the synthesizer a lot, but it sounds very disco, the way he uses it.
Disco and also, like, AOR.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's that one song sounds exactly like Toto.
I'm Yours? Is that one?
Yeah.
I love that song, but I also love Toto. So right. Unabashedly.
Yeah. It's a weird, interesting album. You know, it's like people don't talk about it much because it just doesn't sound like Prince the way we think about Prince. But then when you hear Soft and Wet come on, it's like, there he is, you know, it's almost, compared to the rest of the album, it's sort of surprising, like, how fully formed his sound is. The one thing I would say is the synthesizer line in Soft and Wet has, like, just a little bit of, like, Bernie Worrell's Parliament sound to me.
Yeah,
it's hard
I can
to
hear
describe
that.
Like why I feel that way, but it just has, like, a P-Funk feel to it. P-Funk meets Minneapolis.
You
Dirty Mind, you know, similar story to Salt and Wet. It was just another song on one of the CDs you burnt me, but I really liked it. And this one especially just didn't sound like any of the other songs that I had heard of from him yet, because it's so, like, minimalist. It's only that one beat and then the synthesizer, whereas, like, especially on Purple Rain and, like, later on, he started, you know, doing a lot of overlays and things like that and a lot more instruments. But, yeah, this is just, like, really just the beat and pretty simple lyrics. And that's why I really like it. It sounds like robot sex.
Yeah, every once in a while, I don't know what my favorite Prince album is right now, but every once in a while it's definitely Dirty Mind. It's just such a pure album. It's so, you know, it's really short, to the point. It's like 30 minutes long. There's not many songs. There's like 9 songs, basically, and one of them is only a minute long. And yeah, like you say, the production is so minimalist. They're literally the demos that he recorded. He just gave them to the record company and they press it as the album. And you can kind of tell, and there's something, just the rawness of the sound combined with obviously the rawness of the lyrics. It's almost like it's more punk funk than the stuff that Rick James called punk funk, you know? And so I think especially when I'm like kind of in one of my new wave post-punk phases, Dirty Mind really appeals to me on that level.
Album artwork too. It's really interesting. He's standing in front of that mattress with the bed strings behind it. It's like you can tell what he's getting at, but it's so subtle. It doesn't even look like a mattress. And he does look very punk, like his haircut and just the way it's shot and everything. And I love the back cover too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the back cover is actually my favorite. I have that framed in my living room. You know, I totally get why it's the back cover, but it's one of the most iconic back covers I can think of. The other one's probably Street Songs by Rick James, which I also find in my living room. You know, I kind of wanted to stay away from two obvious choices. You know, I love Purple Rain. I think it's probably objectively the best Prince album. Like, every song is almost perfect, and it just captures that moment so well. And you know, it also it's a soundtrack that totally transcends the status of a soundtrack. But at the same time, you know, one of the great things about Prince is that he was putting out music as B-sides or not putting it out at all that was as good or better than what was actually coming out on the album. And so the B-side of When Doves Cry is called 17 Days. And I honestly, like, on a good day, I think it's like the most perfect pop song ever written.
Gorgeous song.
Yeah. And it went, and like just the craziness of, like, not only is it a B-side, but he originally wrote it for Apollonia 6. So it was going to be an Apollonia song. And
thank God he didn't do that.
He very wisely decided to keep it for himself, which is kind of a trend if you follow Prince's relationship with his protégés. But you can still hear the backing. You know, Brenda and Susan from Apollonia 6 are still doing backing vocals for the song. This broken heart of mine. But yeah, he has just some of the most beautiful love songs and also breakup songs. There's another B-side, How Come You Don't Call Me Anymore, that's probably more famous. 17 Days is like How Come You Don't Call Me Anymore meets like the Book of Revelations. It has these, you know, weird kind of biblical undercurrents, but it's just such a like a deeply felt vocal performance. It just captures these feelings of like longing and loneliness so well. I have definitely listened to this song a lot during like breakups, but I can listen to it anytime and find it totally moving.
I mean, I could say that about any of these songs, but I really, like, I love that image of him with the purple. It's really iconic, and I don't know. Prince had some really, really good album artwork.
Yeah, the purple sunglasses. That's one of my favorite scenes in Purple Rain, too, is where he just shows up at the back of First Avenue and is just, like, glowering at Apollonia behind his sunglasses.
I've said this before, but I swear to God, like, that's... I don't know if that's where I got my flirting techniques or if that's just the way I am and Prince just made it okay for me to be like that. Right. Although not really, because it doesn't work unless you're Prince.
Right.
But like that's what I'll do. I'll just like stare at people and then be kind of cruel to them, like how it was with Apollonia when he told her to like purify herself in the rivers of Lincoln chocolate. It doesn't work unless you're Prince, but right. I can't help it. Because I'm similarly shy, but also... kind of mean.
So we were talking about Prince's breakup songs, and Condition of the Heart is one that honestly, like, I didn't fully get for a while. In fact, all of Around the World in a Day, the album that this came from, I think most people didn't get it. Like, it came out right after Purple Rain, and it did not sound like Purple Rain. There were not many obvious hits on that record. And, you know, Condition of the Heart is like, it starts out, it has this kind of like meandering synthesizer solo, and the song is mixed really quiet. Like, half of it you can barely hear Prince singing. You know, it's like, I just kind of, it was just like meh to me when I first heard it. Then I listened to it after a couple years ago, after an ex-girlfriend dumped me. And, you know, traditionally my relationships have sort of like dragged to a halt. They haven't really been, there hasn't been like a dramatic end to them. They just kind of like peter out, you know? And so that was the first time I'd really experienced like being dumped. And, that was the first like really seriously traumatic breakup I had, and like Condition of the Heart, it like it fucked me up, like I never processed it on that level, but I listened to it a lot, and yeah, it's when you're in that state of mind, like suddenly it makes a lot more sense.
Never been dumped. I've only done the dumping, but the dumping was like probably more heartbreaking for me than it was for any of the guys I've dumped. So that said, I can also relate,
right.
Even though I'm the bitch.
Driving me crazy. Oh, sent a letter to.
She would answer back.
She never answered back enough.
Like I said before, this was probably the first Prince song that I cared about just because I heard it so much. I didn't really know it was Prince before because, like I said, I heard, you know, only really stuff from Purple Rain when I was really little. And just, like, the singles, like, you hear When Doves Cry on the radio and stuff like that. And this didn't sound like anything Prince had ever done, so I don't think it was until later that I realized it was even Prince. But, yeah, I just have memories of going on errands with mom and being picked up from school when this was in the car. And it's just like a really nice, like, spring song. And it's so, like, infectious and happy. And it wasn't really until Prince died that it started, like I cry every time I hear it now. Why it's this specific song and not any of the other ones, but for some reason Raspberry Beret is the one that fucks me up. I don't know why.
Yeah, I always love this one too. Like, this is obviously, you know, this is the one that this was the big hit from Around the World in a Day. And I remember the video growing up. I always wanted a suit made out of clouds like Prince had. I don't think I could pull it off, but I always wanted one. And my favorite part has always been the bridge where the melody changes. It's just something about that change is just like so gorgeous to me. This is another perfect pop song to me.
Rain sounds so cool when it hits the bottom roof. The horses wonder who you are. Thunder drowns out but the lightning sees. You feel like a movie star. Listen, this ain't the first time, ain't the greatest. But I'll tell ya, if I had the chance to do it all again.
I've got another B-side from the same era. We really went hard on Around the World in a Day. Songs like nobody else, and you know, my kind of like my whole relationship with Prince is sort of inextricably connected to the actual relationships that I've been in my life. And, you know, in retrospect, that might be a reason why I didn't get into him until I was in college, because that's when I started dating, when I, you know, my freshman year of college. And just, you know, my looking, when we were looking back at David Bowie, there was so much about like finding myself and expressing myself as an individual that I sort of learned through Bowie. And with Prince, I've sort of learned, you know, the associations that I make with Prince are all about engaging with other people, especially, you know, women that I'm in a relationship with, which is ironic because Prince was, by all accounts, an asshole to everyone who crossed his path, basically. And yet, you know, you see, like, he was an asshole, but people still loved him, you know, like all of the, you know, all of his ex-girlfriends have come out of the woodwork since he died, you know, giving these really sincere messages. So there's just something about him that, even though he was honestly kind of a little shit, like there was something like about him that people couldn't resist. But, you know, so obviously his love songs have always kind of meant a lot to me. And one of my favorites is also one of the weirdest, which is Girl. This came out as the B-side in the U.S. It was the B-side to America after Around the World in a Day. And if you're going to listen to Girl, like, there is a version on the CD collection, the hits and the B-sides. But that's not the one to listen to. The one to listen to is the 12-inch version, because you get to hear him basically lose his damn mind at the end. Like, it gets so weird. It's this like bizarre monologue that he does, that, you know, I'm not even gonna try to do justice to it. We'll just let it play.
I don't know. I guess you frightened me, cause I never wanted anyone like this before. To feel this way, it's like, I don't know, it's like a sin. Sometimes I feel bad. Sometimes I want you so much I can, God, all I have to do is think about you and I can have an orgasm. That sounds funny, doesn't it? Marry me. Yeah, that's right, marry me. Girl, don't you forget love.
But it's endearing and unsettling, and just like nobody else made music like this. And there's so many examples of this too, where Prince will have a really good song that's 3 minutes long, and then you'll hear the 12-inch version, and the end of it is just batshit insane. It's like it's this extra like surprise if you're dedicated enough.
Right. I always hear Do Me Baby on the radio. Yeah. So when it cuts off, I'm always so disappointed. I'm like, this has not even gotten to the best part yet.
Right, yeah. Yeah, where's the part where he's, you know, masturbating and then and talking about how cold it is? That's what I'm here for.
Right. So this is one of the songs that I discovered after you had downloaded all those bootlegs. Mm-hmm. This was never released officially, was it?
No, we're going to be sharing bootlegs, so this podcast might not be might not be up for too long.
Yeah. Really like this song. It's so weird, and it doesn't really sound like a period of time. Like Wonderful Ass almost sounds like it could be from the Dirty Mind era, but it's from 85, and I don't know, it's just another one of those weird little, like, just like nuggets, like Prince nuggets. I just really like it. I don't even know what to say about it.
Yeah, it's...
This is just one of the songs that I always... No matter if I'm listening to Prince or not, this is one that's always on my iPhone.
Yeah, it's so... It's just like... It's just fun. You know, you can kind of tell. I don't know if it was ever really meant to be on an album. It's just like a goofy song. It's sort of like, you know, like Tambourine from Around the World in a Day, except better than Tambourine. But I it's also kind of, it's an example of a song that he actually worked on through several different eras, which is why it sounds kind of like out of time, you know? And he would do that a lot. Like, I mean, there are songs on Graffiti Bridge that are using basic tracks that he recorded in like 1981, you know?
That should have been released in 1981.
Exactly. Like that he, that
it's
he would
not ruin. Always an improvement. Yeah.
Right. But, from as far as I can tell, he started Wonderful Ass in like early 83, which is, you know, like after 1999, before Purple Rain, which is what it kind of sounds like.
It, yeah, it has that's that, what like, I can see machine, that.
You know, kind of electro feel to it. And then like late 85, early 86, the Revolution added, you know, extra vocals and just kind of, you know, little flourishes. And yeah, it's just like it's just a fun song. And according to the wiki I'm at right now, the track's lyrics were inspired by vanity.
Yeah, I heard that too. Her ass is okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if, based on Prince's choice in women, I don't know if he and I see eye to eye as far as like what constitutes a wonderful ass, but.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's the thing. It's like, he tried to tell us that he liked fat girls several times, but I mean, you look at all the women he dated.
Yeah.
And none of them had very big asses, so I don't know what the hell he was trying to say.
I think Prince's definition of a wonderful ass was the closest it could be to his own. I think that was his like gold standard.
I mean, he did have a nice ass, but he was also a man. You don't really want right. a fat ass on a man. So anyway.
So my next pick was another bootleg, and this one comes, I kind of think of it, this is like between the Revolution breaking up and Sign of the Times in 1987. This would have been on Crystal Ball, which was the original track list for Sign of the Times with a whole nother record added to it. It was going to be a 3-album set, and Warner Brothers wasn't having it, so he had to cut it down to 2. And as much as, you know, some days Sign of the Times is my favorite Prince album, we were just talking about this before we started recording, as much as it's a great album, Crystal Ball would have been so much better. So this is Rebirth of the Flesh. I actually chose this one. I mean, it is a good song. It's got a cool, like, you know, funk rock kind of feel. There's some. I like his guitar tone on the song. This is another one that definitely shows like a Parliament funkadelic kind of influence.
It sounds a lot like a lot of the songs on Love Sexy too. Like it could fit right in with Love Sexy.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, and there are a couple songs on that were originally intended for Crystal Ball that ended up on Love Sexy. So that's another kind of like missing link. That whole era of his body of work is so interesting because it's like he's going in so many directions at once that he ends up returning to some of them and kind of reincorporating them to varying degrees of success in later albums. So yeah, it's a cool song in its own merits. But the significance of this song to me is that it's how I met my ex-wife, who's the mother of my son Remy. We were both on the website Last.fm, and it was in our recently played tracks. And, you know, not that many people on Last FM are listening to Rebirth of the Flesh. So, like, we met each other through that and started talking. You know, like, the day that I heard about Prince, I was doing pretty well at not being emotional. And then, you know, I saw my ex-wife posted something on Facebook about how, you know, Remy wouldn't have been born if it wasn't for Prince. And, yeah, that just, like, that really blew my mind. Like, I, that was when it kind of, like, it hit me, and I started feeling really emotional that day. So, you know, this is always going to be, like, a sentimental favorite of mine. What's his, what's yours is yours. Unless you're beating on a game of cards. This ain't cards, motherfucker. This is life. This is real, real, real. We are here. Where are you? Everybody jam to the new fucking crew. Come on. We are here. Where are you? Everybody jam to the new fucking crew.
So now for something completely different.
I'm glad I didn't start crying.
I think Bob George will be the one that we both break down on. <Right. laughs> Bob George might be just... It might be my favorite song. And that's a weird thing to say, but it is the song that I can, no matter how many times I listen to it, I never get tired of it.
Right.
Never. Like, it never loses any of its appeal. There will never be a time when it'll come up on shuffle or something and I will skip past it, ever. Like, I will listen to it at any opportunity. It's just so weird. First of all, I love the beat on it. Like, the beat is legitimately good. Mm. But Bob George is just amazing because you can imagine Prince just alone in the studio. Like, I imagine it being like 3 in the morning and he's just alone in the studio recording this stupid ass song. And it just, like, it has brought me so much glee.
Yeah.
And, like, I always quote it to people, and obviously nobody knows what the hell I'm talking about. But it's just, like, it's so quotable, too.
Right. That slick back patty with all the gold in his mouth. Don't try to play me for yesterday's fool. Cause I slap your ass into the middle of next week. I'm sorry, baby. That's the rules. I pay the rent and it's a raggedy motherfucker. And all you do is suck up food and heat. Say what? Oh yeah. For someone who can't stand them TV dinners, you should eat enough of them motherfuckers. Who bought you that diamond ring? Yeah, right. Since when'd you have a job? You seen that rich motherfucker again. What's his name? Bob. Bob. Ain't that a bitch? What's he do for a living? Manage rock stars? Who? Prince. Ain't that a bitch? That skinny motherfucker with the high voice? Please. Who do I look like, baby? Yesterday's fool? Don't you know I will kill you now? Fucking right. I got a gun. You think I don't? Then what's this? Oh, you quiet now. Mm-hmm. Little. Yeah, right. It might be little, but it's loud.
And then just the fact that he used his stupid Morris Day voice, but he changed the pitch on it. It just to make it sound deeper, but he still has an audible lip.
Right.
So it's like I don't think that's what he was going for.
That is one of the, I feel like one of the sort of, with all the tributes and obituaries rolling out, one of the great unsung, you know, qualities of Prince is his commitment to a stupid joke. Like, because, yeah, he was usually, it was just like him and an engineer in the studio together. And he, you know, like there's a track that came out in the 90s on his compilation Crystal Ball that's just him and Morris Day in the studio for 15 minutes, like doing an exaggerated version of Morris Day's character from the time, except it's Prince doing the voice because he created Morris Day. Like that whole persona is something that he made up. And he would just like, there are all these bootlegs where he'll just like launch into that voice. And, you know, like Bob George, he does that voice, but he slows it down. It's like,
well, even if a girl answers, don't right. hang up, that's, it's supposed to be another woman, but it's clearly Prince doing the stupid Morris Day voice. Like, he didn't even try to make it sound like a woman.
Yeah. And just like, it's not just that he was funny, it's that he was so committed to like a joke that would never come outside of the studio. I have a lot of respect for that.
George home? Hello, Mr. George? This is your conscience, motherfucker. Why don't you leave motherfuckers alone? What's wrong with you? Why can't we just dance? Why can't we just dance? No, fuck that. Fuck that. I don't talk about you. I don't talk about you. And your little almond-shaped head ass. Who the fuck do you think this is? I'll kick your ass. Twice.
Yeah, I think, I guess one thing about songs like Bob George is, I feel like there's a revisionist history that honestly Prince like fanned the flames of himself, you know, like around 2004 with the Musicology tour, he had this whole attitude like, this is real music played by real musicians, you know, like we don't lip sync, you know, and now that he's died, like I'm seeing it come up a lot. You know, people using Prince as this annoying straw man to like people that they consider to be manufactured or whatever. And, you know, it's like, honestly, it's amazing that he could play every instrument in the world. Like, nobody is contesting that. He was a bona fide, like, virtuoso musical genius. But that's also, like, to me, the least interesting thing about him. Like, and honestly, the music that he made when he was in like virtuoso mode was often not very exciting. You know, like you listen to the stuff that he was doing in the mid 2000s and later when he was like basically trying to be like a jazz fusion or a funk band, you know, it's like, it's fine. It's very well performed, but it's not Miles Davis. It's not James Brown. Like, Prince's sensibility to me is playing the music that had the strongest lasting appeal. The instrument he was playing was the studio. And, you know, something like Bob George, it is a drum machine, like a sampler and an arsenal of stupid voices and a guitar. And you know, like that.
And whatever the hell made that stupid gun sound.
Right. A laser. And I want that Prince to be remembered. Like, if in 10 years we're remembering Prince as like some fucking boring guitar god, like, just kill me. Like, that's not my Prince. Hashtag not my Prince.
Honestly, a lot of the ways that people are remembering Prince is annoying me. I think it's that thing where when someone dies, everyone wants to think about what they think is the most positive thing about that person. Like, I've been seeing things about, well, I was talking to you about this, how I keep seeing articles people are sharing about how he mentored women and wasn't sexist.
Right.
Prince was sexist as hell.
Right.
And the women that he was mentoring they had to be gorgeous, mm-hmm. and look suspiciously like him.
Right.
You know, like, he was helping Rosie Gaines out, but he dropped her ass for Carmen Electra. So please do not tell me that Prince was not sexist. Like, I'll agree that he was possibly less sexist than other people, or maybe just sexist in a different way.
Right.
But he for damn sure was sexist. And honestly, like, I don't want Prince to be this perfect, like, you know, he fought for social justice. And, like, all this stuff is technically true. He did mentor women. But, I mean, that's not the whole story, and I don't think it has to be the whole story. I don't understand why we have to put people up on a pedestal. Like, why can't he just be a person?
Right. Yeah, I want him to be both. You know, he did great things as far as social justice, and he also had really weird religious beliefs.
Yeah.
You know, like I mean, I think it's a both and proposition, not an either or.
Right. Like and, he, you know, was technically feminist, but he also threw vanity in a pool. So it's like,
right.
I don't know.
Yeah. And I think that there's something more interesting about that. You know, like, when we put people on pedestals and then tear them down the minute they do or say something problematic, it's like, it's self-defeating. Like, we need to acknowledge that everyone is flawed.
Right.
And work from there, because, you know, everybody's going to fuck up and do some, like, contemptible shit. And it's just exhausting to, like, have to be policing people and to that degree, you know? So we've got one more song to talk about, and like I said, we're ending in 88. We all know this album from the cover art, which to this day, I can say from experience, makes people uncomfortable when they look at it. I used to, especially in grad school, I went through this phase where I would always replace the wallpaper of public computers with Love Sexy, and yeah, I used to call that Prince bombing, because it was basically a terrorist activity.
Oh, well, just like last summer, I don't think it's real, but I found this sweater that is made up completely of just pictures. Like, the pattern on it is all Prince sitting in the Love Sexy album cover, and I cannot find it. So if it exists and someone finds it, send it to me.
Yeah,
that would
be amazing.
Like, I want that sweater so much.
Give it to me. Oh,
Actually one that I didn't get into in a long time. Like I kind of, you know, I listened through Sign of the Times, and then like I heard the single from Love Sexy is Alphabet Street, and I was like, it's all right, but it's not Prince at his best. And I just never, you know, really got into Love Sexy. I finally got into it sometime in the last like 8 years or so. I probably got into it. And the title track is just one of my favorite Prince songs. One of the kind of defining themes of Prince's music is his fusion of the sacred and the sexual. And I feel like Love Sexy, the album, and also the title track is his most kind of coherent expression of that. You know, and this is still something that people misunderstand. Often the kind of like tension between spirituality and sexuality in Prince's music is treated as a contradiction. But it was never really a contradiction to him. It was the thing. Love Sexy is like about sexuality as spirituality. It's the idea that, you know, sex as a like positive connection between people is in itself a kind of religion. And that's just it just really speaks to me. I think actually to this day on Facebook my religious views say Love Sexy. if I have a religion, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, clearly me too. That's actually, I talked about this a little bit in the Kanye podcast, which also got taken down. But I mean, that's what my body of paintings, my body of artwork right now is about. It's very like, I don't want to say it's like inspired by Love Sexy, but I guess me and Prince have a lot of the same sensibilities in that way.
Yeah, so, you know, this is really just like we could have chosen more tracks. Like, it was so hard to boil it down to just, we limited ourselves to just five each. And, you know, like I said, with Prince, you can just dig and dig and dig, and there's no bottom to it. And if there's a silver lining to his passing away last week, it's that it's given me an excuse to, like, dig into Prince again. And it's just an incredible body of work. Like, the sheer breadth and the depth of what he accomplished in a relatively short period of time, you know, I think it's very sad. 57 years old is way too young. But I mean, as far as what he's accomplished, like, there's no more that anyone could have asked of him, you know. Like, it's awe-inspiring what he achieved.
It's just been nice to see a whole bunch of people care about something that I care so much about. And just kind of, I don't know, at least just, well, not even just on Facebook. Like, I've just been talking to people, and, like, everyone I talk to is sad that Prince died, no matter who they are. Like, people you would never think were listening to Prince. And it's just kind of like a weird way to unite people. Like, I said something about that. I reposted something, and I was saying, like, Prince matters to everybody. Like you were saying at the beginning, it doesn't matter how much or how little of his music that you listen to, like, everybody has an experience with him. And I think that's an amazing thing for an artist to achieve.
It's been hard, but it's been like therapeutic just to see, like, even if there's a little bit of whitewashing going on, and, like, sometimes the Prince that people are talking about, I don't fully recognize, like we talked about a little bit. But that's one of the great things. He was so sort of, he was so multifaceted that you can take away something totally different from him. You know, everybody experienced him in a different way. And I think that's sort of the perfect metaphor for who he was. You know, there were so many dimensions to him, so many even, like, contradictory aspects to him as an artist and as a public figure, that, you know, it makes sense that people are coming away from him with all of these different ideas and all of these different images. And, you know, none of them are necessarily 100% true, but none of them are really false either. And this is, like, you know, like, I just think this is one of the few times that the internet seems like people complain about, like, the public mourning on social media, but, like, what else do we have the internet if not for this, if not to, like, share memories? And, you know, not everybody could get on a bus and go to Minneapolis and, you know, like, mourn outside of Paisley Park, but everybody I know was kind of going through some kind of mourning, you know, online. And that seems like a good thing to me. Not a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, people are always saying, like, this is just another way to make a celebrity's death about you, but basically all death is about you. Like, right. Like, it's definitely not about the person who died. They don't give a fuck. They're out of here.
Yeah.
Like, why?
Right.
Why,
yeah, what's
they're not
a
looking down, like, what? You're sharing your memory. Like, I feel like that's a way of preserving Prince's memory. Like, let's talk about him. And, yeah, it's totally about you. That's what an artist does. They touch people. Mm-hmm. What would you have achieved if you died and nobody was saying anything?
Right.
Nobody had any memories associated with you or anything. Like, it's all about you.
Yeah, and I'm just glad that I'm glad that I was able to experience this, you know, and that I still am. You know, like whatever the kind of cliche about when people die, especially when artists die, is that they're gone, but their work stays behind. But it's a cliche for a reason, because, you know, man, we're so lucky that we, you know, we never met Prince, but we get to listen to his music for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, and so much of it doesn't sound dated. Like, yeah, it's like 80s pop, but Prince almost single-handedly created the sound of 80s pop. And when he does it, it doesn't sound like 80s pop. It just sounds like Prince.
Yeah.
So it will just never get old.
Yeah, so I guess that's our Prince podcast. Next month's podcast is going to be another Stone Cold bummer. We're going to talk some more about so many people have been dying this year that it's like, we can't memorialize all of them in as much depth as I'd like. So we're going to do a Memorial Day podcast for some of these other people. And that's coming up, but there will always also, you know, again, it's all about death and rebirth, and the rebirth of Jericho Jones coming soon.
Like a phoenix rising from the ashes, Jericho Jones will rise again.
So we will see you on the website, dystopiandanceparty.com, and enjoy.
I often dream of heaven, and I know that Tracy's there. I know that he has found another friend. Maybe he's found the answer to all the apes know. Maybe one day I'll see my Tracy again. Sometimes it snows in April. Sometimes I feel so bad, so bad. Sometimes I wish that life was never ending. But all good things they say never last, and all good things they say never last. And love, it isn't love until it's past.